As the presidential campaign heats up, a new book looks back at Donald Trump's first administration with a focus on foreign policy and national security. It's written by Lieutenant General H.R. McMaster, a three-star general who served with distinction in the 1991 Gulf War and the Iraq War, and who also served for 13 months as Mr. Trump's national security advisor. McMaster's book is At War With Ourselves, My Tour of Duty in the Trump White House, and I spoke with him earlier today. H.R. McMaster, welcome to the NewsHour. What was your intention in joining the Trump administration back in 2017? What were you hoping to achieve? Yeah.
Well, first, to serve the elected president. As I write in the book, you know, this was my sixth commander-in-chief. I had taken the oath of service when I was a 17-year-old on the plane at West Point. And so what I wanted to do is help, in President Trump's case, you know, what everybody knew would be a disruptive president, disrupt what needed to be disrupted in the area of national security and in foreign policy. And Jeff, you know, I've been on the receiving end of a lot of policies and strategies developed in Washington that really made little sense to me in places like Kabul, Afghanistan, or Baghdad, Iraq. And I thought this was an opportunity to help advance American interests and to help promote American security.
You write in the book about navigating the competing interests within Trump's inner circle in the early days to include then White House advisor Steve Bannon, who's now serving a federal prison term on contempt charges, as well as then Secretary of Defense Jim Mattis and Secretary of State Rex Tillerson. And you say that they viewed Trump as dangerous and seemed to construe their roles as if Trump was an emergency and that anyone abetting him was an adversary. When I read that, that word dangerous stood out to me. Dangerous in what ways?
Well, I think that they were afraid that the president, because of his disruptive nature, would be overly disruptive and put into place policies that maybe cut against U.S. interests. But my experience was, Jeff, whenever you could give the president multiple options, best analysis, obviously, and information, but multiple options, it's in the comparison of those options that he could look at the long-term costs and consequences and make decisions that oftentimes cut against his predilections. Other members of the cabinet and other White House officials, what they really wanted to do is either control the president, or in the case of some, you know, who came in with their own agendas, they didn't want to give multiple options. They want to manipulate decisions consistent with their agenda. And as a historian and a historian who had written about the Vietnam War and how decisions were made in the Lyndon Johnson administration, I realized that this was not unprecedented. This kind of infighting, this is not something new, and I did my best to try to transcend it. And I succeeded to some extent, and I failed to a certain extent.
That manipulation that you talk about, you describe meetings in the Oval Office as exercises in competitive sycophancy. How did that undermine the functioning of the White House and the presidency?
So that was early in my time as National Security Advisor, and I looked around. I said, "This isn't going to work," you know. And I began to limit, you know, who's in the meeting based on the purpose of the meeting, and to provide the president with information the way he likes to receive information, and to also structure the venue. But on one occasion, we went to Camp David, for example, to get away from all distractions and help the president focus on a really important decision involving Afghanistan and the South Asia strategy.
Well, on that front, you write that you had key differences with Mr. Trump on major foreign policy issues, which you enumerate as the allies, the authoritarians, and Afghanistan. Trump thought that some U.S. allies were freeloaders. He embraced some authoritarian leaders that you despised and distrusted. And you pushed for a more significant commitment in Afghanistan. And you've said that Donald Trump bears some responsibility for that chaotic U.S. withdrawal, that same withdrawal that he attacks the Biden administration for. Tell me more about that.
On Afghanistan, this is an example of one of the themes in the book of the president being very capable of evolving his understanding of a situation and then coming to a completely different conclusion. And he put into place, I believe, in August of 2017, and it's actually worth going back to read that speech that he gave, the first sustainable reasoned approach to the war in Afghanistan and more broadly to South Asia. But sadly, he abandoned that approach and I think actually recreated a lot of the deficiencies of the Obama administration with a timeline for withdrawal and talking to the Taliban without the Afghan government present. And that was kind of a setup for the Biden administration's failures. But, you know, the Biden administration did not have to adhere to that. You know, remember, the Biden administration said, well, we had to adhere to Trump's policies. I think that might be the only area where they felt so obligated.
Yeah.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Another theme in the book, you write about your perception that Trump often sought the praise and approval of strongmen foreign leaders like Vladimir Putin, the Philippines' former president, Duterte, so that he could be seen similarly as a strong leader. Tell me more about that.
In that first year of the Trump administration, I relate the story of really imposing more sanctions on Russian entities and individuals than the previous 8 years of the Obama administration, the provision of lethal assistance to Ukrainians. But President Trump really always had faith in his ability to make a big deal, right? And I think he fell into the same kind of trap with Putin that George W. Bush did, President Obama did, remember the reset strategy, and then even President Biden, you know, when he went to Geneva and thought that maybe they could have a meeting of the minds. And so my message, and I relate this in the book, is I should remind the president, hey, this guy is the best liar, best deceiver in the world.
Well, you say that you observe in the book that you wished Trump could separate the issue of Russian election meddling from the legitimacy of his presidency.
Yeah.
Why has he been so unable to make that kind of distinction?
Well, you know, you have to think, when he came into office, right, there was this cloud of so-called, you know, collusion, which was proved to be false, right, on the part of the campaign. And you had the Mueller investigation. That create kind of a sense of beleaguerment for him, you know, and what he would do is conflate three, you know, distinct but kind of related questions of, hey, did they attack the election and try to undermine our democratic process? Heck yes, they did. That's what the Russians do, right? There's the great book by Thomas Ridd called Active Measures. They've been doing this kind of thing, the Soviets, going all the way back to the 30s. But the second, the related question is, do they care who wins? I really don't think the Russians give a damn who wins our elections, right? The chaos is the point. And what they want is, they want large numbers of Americans to doubt the legitimacy of the result. I think the president tended to conflate those questions. And I wish he had said this, that heck yes, they did. And we're going to impose costs on them, or we're going to defend our democratic principles and institutions and processes. But at the same time, acknowledge that obviously it did not affect the legitimacy of his presidency or his election. That's what Russia wants. And that's why the president's election denial was terrible in 2020. And that's why others on the other side of the political spectrum who denied the legitimacy of the election in 2016, it's a gift to Putin.
This book arrives at a timely moment, just as many Americans are starting to consider whether Donald Trump or Vice President Kamala Harris would make a better commander-in-chief. Right. Would a second Trump term, in your estimation, be poised to properly address the range of foreign policy challenges we face as we stand so close potentially to regional wars in the Middle East and the South China Sea?
Yeah, that's for readers to decide. And you've got the information in the book. And I think in some of the areas where President Trump has been consistent, yes, I think he would advance American interests. I think a great example is in the area of energy security. I think we have tremendous potential in our country to really loosen the grip of authoritarians on energy supplies internationally. And then I think that where else he's been consistent is burden sharing, right? That's a good theme. Reciprocity in trade. So I go through all of these in the book. Those are all positive.
You've said you would not serve in a second Trump administration if he's reelected. Why not?
Well, you know, I'll tell you, Jeff, I would serve in any administration where I think I could make a difference. I think now with President Trump, I can't make a difference with him. You know, we just got kind of used up in that process. And I think, you know, I was at peace with that. But, you know, I think the main theme, though, Jeff, is that I think we got a lot done in that first year that everybody was describing. Remember, the word chaos was used in like almost every headline. And yeah, it was chaotic, you know, and it was less than harmonious, I guess I should say. But you know, I think we worked through a lot of that tension and we put in place, I think, some really important and long overdue correctives to previous unwise policies.
H.R. McMaster, the book is At War With Ourselves, My Tour of Duty in the Trump White House. It is an intriguing read. Thanks for being here. We appreciate it.
Oh, thanks for the opportunity to be with you, Jeff. Thank you.